If you were not happy with yourself before surgery, you will never be happy after it. And so I talked Kyla out of it. I knew Sharon would not have approved of it. Kyla was still young, and she would eventually grow into the woman she hoped to be. Did you know she was pregnant? Calloway asked. He blinked. Why would I know that? I figured as a doctor she would have confided in you. He shook his head. From what I heard, she confided in no one. Our family was blindsided when we heard it. Sorry to have wasted your time, Dr. Lester, Calloway said. Dr. Lester stared at him, his face relaxed. I understand what you were trying to do for Paul, but my family just wants this ordeal behind us. I can see that from the press conferences your family keeps holding. They're my father's idea, I'm afraid. He has a re-election to consider. Dr. Lester got up to open the door for Calloway, signaling the end of the interview. Dr. Lester offered his hand, which Calloway shook. Good luck in your investigation, Mr. Calloway. I wish you the best. When he removed his hand from his, Calloway noticed something. Didn't you have a bandage on your hand? He asked. Dr. Lester looked confused. Sorry? I clearly remember that when you came to my office, your hand was covered. I might have gotten my hand caught in the door or something foolish like that. I can be clumsy sometimes. Chapter 84. Calloway returned to his office feeling deflated. So far, he had not come up with anything that could help Paul. He should not have made any promises to him. Calloway was used to catching cheaters in the act, not getting people off a murder one charge. Only once had he captured a killer, and that was with the help of Echo Rose. He was in way over his head. If Roth could not do anything for Paul, what made him so sure he could do something? He rubbed his temples. He felt a headache coming on. He could use a drink about now. He turned on the TV and froze in his chair. Judy Barrows was standing on the courthouse steps. Flanked on either side of her were Holt and Fisher. Holt had a grin on his face, while Fisher looked like she would rather not be there. Calloway turned up the volume. Barrows said, "In light of new evidence, the district attorney's office has laid additional charges against Paul Gardner. These charges are on top of the first-degree murder of Kyla Gardner. They relate to the death of Pedro Catano. I would like to add that neither Mr. Gardner nor his lawyer, Evan Roth, were in court. However, a representative from Mr. Roth's office was there to hear the charges on his behalf. A written copy has been sent from my office to Mr. Roth's firm. A court date has been set for Thursday." Only 2 days away, Calloway thought. Damn! Mr. Gardner is required to enter a plea of guilty or not guilty to these additional charges. Failure to do so may result in the judge taking actions at his or her disposal. Calloway shut the TV off and closed his eyes. The rope around Paul's neck had tightened even further. He had 2 days to make a decision, whether he liked it or not. Roth would encourage him to plead guilty. He had no interest for this case to go to trial. Paul could not afford one, and Roth did not want to lose one. At this stage of the investigation, Calloway doubted very much that a deal was still on the table. Holt would make sure it was not. There was no incentive for the prosecution to agree to one anyway. The cards were stacked in the prosecution's favor. It was not a matter of if Paul would spend time in prison. It was a matter of how long he would be there. If, for some strange reason, Paul did not cave into the pressures and still went to trial, he would be looking at the death penalty. Calloway could feel the pressure. It was suffocating. He no longer wanted a drink. He just wanted to get far away from Milton. Chapter 85. Time was running out, and Calloway knew he had not a minute to spare. He had gotten himself into this, and he had to find a way out. He left the office, but instead of going to a bar, he headed to a convenience store and bought a cup of coffee from the vending machine. The coffee was old and stale, but he needed the caffeine to jolt his senses. He came back to his office and sat down behind his desk. He opened the file Roth had given him. He took a sip from the cup and nearly spat the coffee out. The beverage tasted bitter. He threw the cup in the garbage. He turned his attention to the file and started from the beginning. He wanted to make sure he had not missed anything. An hour later, he dropped his head into his palms and closed his eyes. He had found nothing that could help him in his cause. He had gone over everything twice and still had come up empty. The entire file was strewn across the office floor. He wanted to grab the papers and toss them out the window. He felt defeated. He had lost, and the real killer had won. Calloway was certain of Paul's innocence, and he wanted to prove it not only to Paul, but also himself. He sighed. How am I going to break this to him? He thought. I don't want to push him over the edge and make him kill himself. He opened his eyes and saw a photo lying at the foot of his desk. He leaned down and picked it up. It was a close-up photo of Kyla's face, taken when she was found in her bedroom. A light went on in his head. He rushed out of the office and walked down the block to a payphone. He did not want his telephone number displayed on the other end. He dialed a number, and after a short conversation, he hung up. In his mind, the pieces began to fall into place. He could not believe he had missed this detail when he first saw it. If he had put it together earlier, he could have solved Kyla's case by now. But he still needed to confirm what he felt to be true. He remembered the places Kyla had visited from her social media page. He decided to go check out the last place she had gone to on the day of her death. The restaurant was upscale, but not snobbish. An eclectic range of clientele was already seated inside when Calloway approached a waiter and asked to speak to the owner. After explaining what he wanted, the owner shook his head.
We don't let just anyone see footage from our security cameras.
But it's a matter of life and death, Calloway said.
I'm sorry. If you want to see it, then you'll need to come back with a warrant.
I'm a private investigator.
Exactly. You're not a cop.
Calloway could tell the man was not going to budge. He left the restaurant, feeling deeply frustrated. Chapter 86. Calloway waited outside the restaurant, watching as a car pulled up to the curb. Fisher got out. Calloway had seen no other option, so he called her. She was reluctant at first, but after he begged her, she agreed. This better be important, she said. It is, he said. They went inside the restaurant. The waiter recognized Calloway and flagged down the owner. She's a cop, Calloway said to him.
I hope she has a warrant, the owner replied.
I don't need one, Fisher said. I just saw that your liquor license expired a week ago.
I'm going to get it renewed.
But it's not renewed today. I'm sure I can contact the Alcohol Beverage Control Agency and have them come and shut down this place until you get a new license.
You won't do that, the owner said, hoping she was bluffing.
Just watch me. Fisher pulled out her cell phone. The owner put his hands up.
Okay, okay, what do you want?
Show us the security footage, and I'll ignore ever seeing your expired license. But you have to get a new license as soon as possible, and by that I mean tomorrow.
Got it, no problem.
He took them to his office in the basement. The room was small, and with the desk and chair, the room looked even more congested. The owner pointed to a computer monitor.
All the cameras get relayed to the screen. What do you want to see?
Calloway gave him the time and date. The owner punched it in, and the image changed. They watched as customers and waiters moved around the dining area. Calloway kept an eye on the clock at the bottom of the screen. Whenever a woman entered the restaurant, his heart would swell with hope. When he saw it was not Kyla, his hope would vaporize in an instant. After almost half an hour, he realized Kyla had never come into the restaurant. Fisher turned to him. You got any other bright ideas? He was shocked. Kyla had not only tagged herself being at this location, she had also taken a photo of herself in front of the restaurant and had posted it on her page. Wait, he said. Can you show me the footage from the camera on the front of the restaurant?
Sure, whatever, the owner replied.
The image on the screen switched. They watched as customers moved in and out of the restaurant. Cars drove by on the road, and people walked past. Calloway's back arched when a woman appeared on the screen. It was Kyla. she was on the other side of the road, across from the restaurant. She stopped in front of a bar and then proceeded to take a photo of herself. Her back was to the restaurant, which explained why her phone had caught the restaurant's name. She went inside the bar. "We need to go check out their security footage," Calloway said to Fisher.
"They're closed right now," the owner said. "They don't open until after 4 p.m. But they stay open till early in the morning."
Calloway rubbed his chin. He was contemplating his next step. "Can we see more of the footage?"
"Sure," the owner said with a slight shrug.
Calloway watched the screen with intense focus. If his hunch was right, he would see someone soon. Close to 10 minutes later, a man walked up to the bar. Calloway recognized him. The man looked around and then went inside the bar. Almost half an hour later, Kyla came through the front doors again. The man was right behind her as she stormed away. They both disappeared from view. Calloway could only imagine what happened next, because only a few hours later, she was found dead. Chapter 87. "It's Dr. Richard Lester," Calloway said. "He killed Kyla Gardner." They were in an interview room at the Milton Police Department. Calloway sat across from Holt. Fisher was standing by the wall. She refused to betray her partner. If they were going to do anything, she was not going to do it alone. They had shown Holt the footage from the bar. In it, Kyla entered the bar and took a seat in the corner. She waited until Lester showed up. He ordered a bottle for himself and a glass of water for her. For close to half an hour, Kyla and Lester got into a heated argument. There was no audio in the footage, but they could tell whenever she raised her voice. Her arms would flail wildly, and he would try to calm her down by holding her hand. It would work for a little bit until she would go off on him again. Finally, she got up and stormed out of the bar. He followed right behind her.
"Outrageous," Holt bellowed, shaking his head. "If this is your way of trying to save your client, then you're too late. Paul Gardner is going to trial, and he's going to die in prison."
"Paul's a good man," Calloway countered.
"Probably the only innocent person in this entire mess."
"I don't buy it. Plus, that video doesn't prove anything."
"It shows Kyla was last seen with her uncle."
"So what?" Holt snapped. "Do you have video of her getting in the same car as him?"
Calloway opened his mouth, but then shut it.
"Exactly," Holt said. "We don't know what happened after the end of the video. What if she went home right after that and her father saw her and attacked her?"
"Look at the timestamp on the video," Calloway said. "It's almost an hour before Paul got home. I should know. I was at the Gardner residence on a stakeout. I can tell you that no one was home at that time. Not Kyla, not Sharon, not even Paul."
"Okay, how long is the drive from the bar to the Gardner's home?" Holt asked.
Calloway looked at Fisher. She pulled out her cell phone and did a search. She frowned. "It's about a 20-minute drive." Holt smiled.
"That's enough time to get there before Gardner and his wife made it home."
It was Calloway's turn to smile. "I was there way before that, and I can tell you the house was empty. I have photos to prove this."
"Your photos have done enough damage, so no thanks," Holt grumbled. "You're wasting my time. I'm not interested in conjectures and theories. All evidence points to Gardner, and that's who I'm going after."
He stood up to leave. Fisher said, "Greg." He stopped. Fisher only called him by his first name when it was important. "Just hear him out, please," she said. He stared at her and sat back down. Chapter 88. Calloway said, "There is a reason why Paul doesn't remember anything from that night." He slid the toxicology report across the table. Holt read it and looked up.
"Rohypnol and chloroform?"
"Yes." Holt's face creased.
"Who's Gator Peckerwood?"
"Ignore that," Calloway said, "but I guarantee the test results are from Paul's blood." Holt waved the report in the air.
"This is inadmissible in court. It doesn't even have your client's name on it."
"You can go right now and get a blood sample from Paul. There are still traces of the drugs in his body. It will confirm what that report says." Holt paused, thinking.
Okay, let's say I believe you. How did Rohypnol and chloroform get in him?
I made a phone call to Lester's clinic, and I acted like I was calling from the medical supply company. I asked them to confirm if they had ordered a bottle of chloroform. It's nearly impossible to get it on the market, but it's still accessible to doctors, and some still carry it in their office. His secretary was surprised when I asked her, but when she checked her records, it showed Lester had put in a request for a bottle the day after Kyla's murder.
Holt's brow furrowed. So what does that prove?
It proves he had taken a bottle from his clinic for personal use, and then ordered another the next day to replenish the inventory.
He could have used it on a patient and run out.
Why not have his secretary order more? She does it on a regular basis. I believe Lester didn't want her knowing he had taken a bottle.
Holt leaned back in his chair and crossed his massive arms over his chest. Still doesn't answer my question as to how Gardner got these drugs in his system.
Let me explain. Most doctors prefer to use ether for anesthesia, but it takes longer to knock out a person. Chloroform is volatile, but it's quicker to put someone under. So I believe it became the go-to choice for Lester. If you go to his clinic and his office, you'll see artifacts from all the trips he has taken abroad, most predominantly to African countries. I did a quick internet search and found out Lester has been to Uganda multiple times on humanitarian missions. In war-ravaged areas, his services as a plastic surgeon are invaluable. Women are raped and disfigured. He can make them look normal again.
What's your point? Holt asked impatiently.
In Uganda, it is very easy to buy chloroform on the streets. Criminals spray chloroform through windows and ventilators in order to sedate the occupants inside a house. They then break into the house and rob them, or worse, rape them in some cases.
Holt's face was hard. Calloway was not sure if he believed him or not.
Calloway added, I visited the Gardner residence, and I took a photo of the window in the guest house where Paul was found asleep.
Calloway pulled out his cell phone and showed it to Holt.
You can see the window is slightly open. I only noticed it because of a cool breeze that was coming through it. If you scroll to the next photo, you'll see a boot print next to the window. It's not enough to get a shoe size, but it confirms someone was at that window. I believe it belongs to Lester, from when he released chloroform into the room, knocking Paul unconscious.
Holt frowned. I assume you broke into the guest house?
Well, I don't have a warrant like you guys, do I?
Again, inadmissible in court.
Calloway ignored the last comment and continued. And as far as Rohypnol is concerned, Lester's a doctor. He has access to a variety of drugs. It was used so Paul did not remember anything from that night.
Why?
So he could set him up for Kyla's murder.
I still don't buy it.
Calloway pulled out a photo and laid it on the table. It was a close-up of Kyla's face. This is what triggered it for me. In the photo, you can see clearly that Kyla's lips are swollen. There's even a cut on the upper lip. They could have only ended up like that from being struck by something, most presumably a hand. When I initially met Lester at my office, I noticed a bandage on his hand. But later, when I asked him about it, he said he must have clumsily cut his hand. Calloway paused.
It's an odd thing to say for a plastic surgeon. Their entire career relies on what they can do with their hands. For that reason, they take extra care of them. And if you check the photos of the arrest, Paul has no cuts or bruises anywhere on his body, specifically his hands.
Calloway could see Holt was mulling this over. He saw his chance to win him over.
Chapter 89. Dr. Richard Lester is the father of Kyla's unborn child, Calloway said.
What? Holt was beside himself. Do you have conclusive evidence of this, or are you merely making false accusations to prove your point?
I don't have any evidence, but just look at the footage from the bar. You can see Lester ordered a bottle of alcohol for himself, but only ordered a glass of water for Kyla. He lied to me when I asked him if he knew Kyla was pregnant. He always knew because she had told him.
Holt still did not look convinced.
Listen, Calloway said. In the video, you can see them arguing. I bet she was telling him her intention to keep the baby, and also that she wanted him to marry her.
It was the reason she'd had the fight with Paul on the morning of her death. Paul had no idea she was pregnant, but he was against her getting married because he thought she was too young. On her social media page, she had mentioned she would be making a big announcement soon. I think she meant telling the world of the baby and her desire to get married. She was going to do that after she had spoken to Lester. His reaction, although muted when compared to hers, explained that he was against this. She then stormed out, and he followed her. I think later, it could even be right after that video, he hit her in a fit of rage. The bandage on his hand and the cut on her lip confirms this. She might have even lashed out at him at this point, and fearing what he had done, he strangled her. This was supported by the medical examiner's report. He then had to get rid of the body, and he couldn't dump her just anywhere. The patrons at the bar had seen him arguing with her. He needed a scapegoat, and it was Paul. He drove her body back to her house, and then he proceeded to sedate Paul with chloroform and Rohypnol. He then placed her body in the bedroom and proceeded to stab her, even after she was already dead. "Why would he do that?" Holt asked. He needed to link Paul to the crime. He then wiped the blood on Paul's golf shirt. You remember that there was only a streak of red and not a splatter? It could have only come from a knife being wiped clean on a piece of cloth. He then placed the knife in Paul's hand to get his fingerprints on it. Then he placed it in the glove compartment of the Audi. If you also remember, the tip of the knife was clean while the rest of the blade was covered in blood. I believe Lester held the knife from the tip so as to retain Kyla's blood and Paul's fingerprints on it. Holt held up his hand to stop him.
If what you say is true, how did he manage to do all this without Sharon Gardner finding out?
She was not at home at that time, remember? Calloway said. She was having a tryst with Kenny Goldman.
Holt saw the connection. But how did he know she would not be home?
The apartment she met Goldman at is registered to Lester.
Holt's eyes widened. It is?
Yes.
Go on, Holt said.
Also, when Lester came to my office to buy the photos from that night, he wasn't doing it to protect his sister. He was doing it to protect himself. He did not expect that Paul had hired a private investigator, and he feared he might show up in the photos. He had nothing to worry about, because I was in another part of the city tailing his sister.
Calloway could see he had Holt. He was analyzing all the information Calloway had presented to him.
As a detective, he could not ignore how things were falling into place. The narrative made more sense than the one Holt had created.
He finally said, "Even if I believed everything you just said, you still broke a lot of rules in getting this information, Calloway."
"I did," Calloway agreed.
"It means I can't take this to the DA. The evidence won't hold up in court."
Calloway held out his cell phone for him. It had a photo of Kyla. This was taken by her outside the bar. That's how we knew where she was when we saw the restaurant in the background. If you look at the photo carefully, you'll notice Kyla is wearing a heart-shaped pendant. Her ex-boyfriend, Jay Buchwald, had given it to her, and for some reason she continued to wear it. Calloway then slid to Holt a Polaroid of Kyla lying in her bed. This was taken when she was found dead. You'll notice she is wearing the same clothes, but the pendant is missing.
Fisher chimed in. "I went through the box of evidence and saw our guys tagged no pendant from the victim."
Calloway said, "We find the pendant. We find the killer."
Holt stared at him. "And how are you going to do that?"
"I have an idea," Calloway replied.
Chapter 90. Dr. Richard Lester examined the patient closely. The woman was the wife of a media magnate. She was in her late 40s, and he could see that she already had too much work done on her. The dozens of injections over the years to fade the wrinkles had frozen her face into a permanent scowl. She looked more like a hideous wax doll than a living, breathing human being. She should stop and let nature take its course, he thought. But the quest for youth was beyond rationale. People got old, and their body aged with it as part of the cycle of life. But Lester would not reason with her, nor would he talk her out of it. She did not need additional procedures, but she was worth a lot of money, and he would bill her accordingly. "I would recommend we inject the lips, soften the wrinkles, and tighten the skin under the chin," he said. She tried a smile, but it was futile.
I like the sound of that.
Great, he replied. Why don't you talk to my secretary at the front desk, and let's see if we can't squeeze you in as soon as possible. In reality, his schedule was empty. His clinic was hemorrhaging money. It once thrived, to the point where he had to turn people away. Even working 12-hour days was not enough to meet the demand. But after the Great Recession of 2008, people had begun to rein in their spending. There was a misconception that only the rich and wealthy got work done on their bodies. If that was the case, most plastic surgeons would be out of business. There were only so many affluent people in the city, and not all were shallow enough to spend thousands of dollars to be young again. It was the average person, the people off the street, who were his best clients. A mother looking to get rid of extra flab around her waist after her second or third child. A teenage girl who wants her nose to look like a certain pop singer's convinces her parents that she needs the procedure. A young man who thinks all men should be hairless, thanks to TV ads, comes in for laser hair removal. All these services, even if he personally was not involved in them, helped bring money into the clinic. This allowed him to focus on the well-off clients. He would cater to all their needs. He would visit their homes at all times of the day. He would drive to a party in the middle of the night if they needed a quick touch-up. He had even flown across the country so that they could look good for a presentation. He would charge a bundle for these personal calls. Now things were a little different. He had to cut his staff by half, and those who were still employed worked part-time. The woman thanked him and left his office. He was reaching for his cell phone in case there was an urgent call when his secretary knocked on the door. "Dr. Lester, there are some people here to see you," she said.
"Tell them to make an appointment," he said, annoyed.
Even if his schedule was free, he never took walk-ins. They were only interested in finding out his fee, and when they did, they almost never came back. He preferred appointments only after his secretary had gone over their pricing structure with them. Also, he wanted to give off the impression that he was an in-demand surgeon. He once was, and he believed he would be again. The economy went up and down, and at the moment it was in a downturn. But the moment it moved back up, clients would come flocking in. "They are not here for a procedure," the secretary said. "They are detectives from the Milton Police Department." Lester was silent a moment.
"Okay, I'll see them," he said.
He went out and found a man and a woman waiting for them. They flashed their badges and introduced themselves. He knew who they were. He had seen them on TV at the press conference. Detectives Holt and Fisher.
"Is this about my niece?" he asked.
They looked at him.
"I mean, you are assigned to her case, are you not?"
"Yes, we are," Detective Holt replied.
"How can I help you?"
"We are trying to contact your sister, Sharon Gardner, but we've not had any success. Do you know where we can find her?"
Lester's brow furrowed.
"She's still living at my residence, but I thought she had already given her statement to the police. So what's this about?"
Detective Holt pulled out a Polaroid and held it out for him to see.
"Your niece was wearing this pendant. It is evidence we believe that can help us solve this case. We were hoping to speak to your sister in case she may have it."
Lester frowned.
"I thought my brother-in-law killed my niece."
"I can't go into any details, but we have information to the contrary. Can you please have your sister contact us?"
"Yes, of course."
Lester took Holt's card. He said, "As you know, my sister is under a lot of stress, so she's not taking any calls. But the moment I see her, I will have her contact you."
Chapter 91. Lester watched the detectives leave the clinic. He went back into his office and shut the door. He pulled off his white coat and grabbed the cell phone on his desk. There were several missed calls. He never answered his phone when he was with a patient. The calls did not look urgent, so he stuffed the phone in his pocket. He went back to the front desk and told his secretary he was going out for lunch. She reminded him of an appointment later in the day, but he was already out the door. He got in his Mercedes-Benz and drove out of the clinic's parking lot. He took the highway. He knew the route by heart. 25 minutes later, he pulled in front of an apartment building. He drove around to the back and parked in a tenant parking spot.
He rushed into the building and took the elevator up to the 6th floor. He entered the unit and headed straight for the bedroom. He looked underneath the bed, the mattress, the side table, and inside the closet. He then moved to the bathroom. He was certain it would not be here, but he had to make sure. After he checked the floor and the area around the toilet, he turned to the living room. He pushed the sofa aside, looked behind the TV stand, and pulled aside the drapes. He frowned and went to the kitchen. He pulled open the cupboards and the fridge. He cursed and slammed the fridge door shut. He went back to the living room and sat down on the sofa. He shut his eyes and tried to retrace his steps that night. He was at his clinic when he had received Kyla's call. She wanted to speak to him. Her voice sounded urgent, but also excited. He rushed over and they met at a bar. He already knew she was pregnant. She had told him several weeks before. It was a mistake. He regretted the moment it had happened. She was young and beautiful. He was divorced and not seeing anyone. She had come to his clinic wanting to get work done. He had always managed to talk her out of it. He was surprised one day when she asked about the apartment. She knew of her mother's affairs. Unlike her father, she was not naive about what was going on in the family. She wanted to see the apartment where her mother took the men. He saw no harm in it. She already knew about it, so why not take her there? She was an adult, after all. She was capable of making her own decisions. He was also concerned that she would tell others about the apartment if he did not comply. The apartment was used by him, his sister, and even their father on some occasions. It was a family secret, one they did not want the public to find out about. He would take his female patients to the apartment for a few hours when the opportunity arose. It was the main reason for his two divorces. His ex-wives had found out about his affairs, and he paid them handsomely to keep them from telling anyone. At the bar, Kyla had informed him of her decision to keep the baby. She also wanted him to marry her, as she did not want to raise the child on her own. "There was no way I can do that," he had said to her. Then he expounded on how his sister would be livid and his reputation would be ruined, not to mention the impact it would have on his father's bid for re-election. If word of their family drama got out, his father's political career would be over. They argued until she stormed out of the bar. He followed her, and he was able to calm her down. He drove her back to the apartment. He wanted to have a long conversation with her in private. Maybe he could talk some sense into her, and this matter would be behind them. But it did not turn out that way. She was incensed that he would even consider making her get an abortion. She called him nasty names. She threatened to tell her mother the truth and expose him to the world. He got angry, and he hit her across the face, splitting her lip and gashing his hand. She was shocked at what he had done. So was he. He did not believe in violence. She screamed at the top of her lungs. She tried to lunge at him, and that was when he grabbed her by the throat. She was still screaming and calling him names when he pushed her to the wall. He squeezed tight. He wanted her to quiet down. Her eyes suddenly bulged. And when he let go, she was dead. Tears flowed down his cheeks as he remembered that moment. He never meant to hurt her. He opened his eyes when something occurred to him. He rushed out of the apartment and took the elevators down to the main lobby. He raced to the Mercedes-Benz and opened the trunk. He pushed aside a gym bag and a trunk organizer. He spotted it in the corner. He leaned in and picked up the heart-shaped pendant. It must have fallen off when he had placed Kyla's body in the trunk. A shadow fell over him. He turned and saw Detectives Holt and Fisher. "Keep your hands where we can see them," Fisher ordered. Her hand was on her gun holster. He complied. Holt came over, and with a gloved hand, he grabbed the pendant from Dr. Lester.
"Look at what we have here," he said, as he placed the pendant in a clear plastic bag.
Fisher cuffed him and said, "Dr. Richard Lester, you are under arrest for the murder of Kyla Gardner." Lester lowered his head. He knew it was over.
Chapter 92.
Calloway leaned on the hood of his car. It was parked in front of the Milton PD. He checked his watch and looked around. He spotted Fisher coming out of the main doors. She had a smile on her face. "Lester confessed to the whole thing," she said.
"I knew he would," he replied.
"Your theory of how it went down was pretty accurate. Lester filled us in on anything that we were not sure of." "Where's Holt?"
"He's booking Lester as we speak."
Calloway could not help but smile himself.
"How are you so certain that Gardner didn't do it?" Fisher asked. "I mean, the odds were stacked against him."
"There was something I did not tell you."
"What?"
"On the day Kyla was murdered, Paul was at my office. He had come to pay me the first installment for the job. He didn't look like a man who was going to murder his daughter later that night. He was tired, but he was calm. He was more preoccupied with what was going on with his business, which I knew was struggling."
"That still is not enough to think he couldn't have done it."
"I can't explain it, but when I looked into his eyes, I didn't see a murderer. What I saw was an honest man who, even though he was under financial pressures, wanted to make sure I was paid before I started the job. It was something I could never shake off."
"Well, I'm glad you pursued this until the end, or else we would have sent a man to prison for a crime he never committed."
Holt approached Calloway.
"I guess I owe you an apology."
"I think you owe Paul Gardner an apology." He stared at Calloway for a second, then he nodded and held out his hand.
"Thanks," he said.
Calloway shook Holt's hand. Fisher's phone buzzed. She answered it. When she hung up, she said,
"You won't believe this."
"What?" Holt and Calloway asked in unison.
"I'll explain on the way there," she replied.
They drove straight to the house. After parking next to the water fountain, they raced up the stairs to the second floor. They spotted a Filipino lady weeping by the bedroom door. They entered the bathroom and found a body submerged in the bathtub. There was a bottle of alcohol on the floor, and next to it was an empty bottle of sleeping pills. Sharon Gardner's eyes were closed, but it was obvious she was dead.
"I guess the guilt got the better of her," Fisher said.
"Why?" Holt replied. "She didn't kill her daughter, and I doubt she knew her brother was the baby's father."
Calloway said, "Maybe she blamed herself for not being home the night her daughter was murdered." Holt sighed and shook his head.
"This is one weird family."
Chapter 93.
Outside the house, Calloway said,
"So I guess all the charges against Paul are dropped, right?"
"Not quite," Holt said. "Lester only confessed to murdering Kyla Gardner, not Pedro Catano."
"What?"
Calloway was incredulous.
"Did you push him on it?"
"Sure we did," Holt replied. "He said he has no idea what happened to Pedro. He was too busy with staging Kyla's murder to look like Gardner had done it."
Fisher added, "Lester wouldn't budge in his statement. And I have to admit, the evidence against him killing Pedro isn't strong enough. The timeline just doesn't add up."
"So what are you saying?"
"The gun registered to Gardner was used to shoot and kill Pedro," Fisher said.
"Until we solve that, the charges against Gardner stay."
Calloway shook his head, thinking, "If Lester didn't kill Pedro, and Paul didn't either, then who could it be?"
"Your guess is as good as ours," Fisher said. Calloway's eyes widened.
"Why didn't I see it before?"
He said more to himself than to Holt and Fisher.
"What?" Fisher asked. "You solved Pedro's murder, too?"
"I think I just might have."
"Okay, so who is it?"
Calloway began walking away from them.
"I need to do something first."
Chapter 94.
Calloway pulled up to the Gardner residence and parked in the driveway. Instead of going through the front, where the yellow police tape was still visible, he went around to the back. The gate had been unlocked after his last visit. He saw the guest house up ahead. He turned left and headed straight for the sliding doors at the back of the house. He checked and found the doors were unlocked. He entered. The house was dark. He went through the kitchen and entered the living room. He spotted a figure standing in the shadow by the windows.
"You're not Mike Grabonski," the man said.
"You're right, Mr. Senator," Calloway said. "I'm not." Senator Baron Lester came into the light. His face was hard, and his steely eyes were focused directly at him. Calloway had gone to Mike's house, and when he explained what he wanted him to do, Mike was more than willing to help. Mike had called Senator Lester and told him he had seen a car driving away from the strip mall on the night Pedro Catano's body was found. Mike even provided a license plate number, which Calloway was able to get from an online search. A witness who worked at a diner across from the strip mall had stated in the newspapers that he had seen a black sedan driving away from the scene. It was easy to mistake it for a black Audi. What most people did not know was that Senator Lester drove a black Lincoln Town Car. Once Mike had Senator Lester's attention, he told him he wanted $25,000, or else he would go to the media and the police. Calloway knew Senator Lester would agree to meet. He had, after all, paid Gus Holden to stay away from his daughter and granddaughter. Senator Lester was known to buy his way out of a bad situation.
"You are the private investigator my son-in-law hired, aren't you?"
Senator Lester said.
"I am. I'm not sure what game you're playing, but I'm leaving."
Calloway pulled out his cell phone and played a recording. It was the conversation between Mike and Senator Lester. "I'm sure the voters of this fine state would be troubled by this."
"How much do you want?"
Senator Lester asked through gritted teeth. "I don't want money, sir," Calloway replied. "I just don't want an innocent man to go to jail for something he didn't do. That's all."
"I'm not sure what you're talking about."
"I know you killed Pedro. I just want to know why." Senator Lester smiled.
"You expect me to confess so that you can record it?"
"No, I expect you to tell the truth, sir."
"Why would I do that?"
"The guilt must be eating away at your soul." Senator Lester stared at him. "At the press conference with Pedro's father, you said you will cover his son's funeral expenses. That was your way of making amends for killing his son," Calloway said. "But you did kill him, sir." Senator Lester's shoulders slumped. He grabbed a chair and sat down. He lowered his head.
"It wasn't supposed to happen like that. I didn't want to hurt Pedro. I really didn't. Luis has worked for me for decades. Pedro grew up right before my eyes. When he was young, I used to give Luis a bonus for Christmas so that he could buy the boy a nice gift. I can't believe I did that to him."
Senator Lester choked up in tears.
"What happened, sir?"
Calloway asked a minute later. Senator Lester sighed.
"Richard told me what had happened between him and Kyla. I was beyond furious. Sharon would never forgive Richard for what he had done. It would tear the family apart. I told Richard to do everything to convince Kyla to abort the baby. It was the only way for us to move on as a family. Richard was able to convince Kyla, but then she abruptly changed her mind. The night Kyla was found dead, Richard had called me. He said he and Kyla had gotten into an argument, and he was taking her to the apartment to discuss the matter in private. I waited patiently for him to call me and tell me she had agreed. When I didn't hear from him, I decided to go to the apartment. I figured maybe I could help him reason with her. When I got there, the place was empty. I had no idea what had happened. I left when I saw Sharon enter the parking lot."
Calloway did not remember seeing Senator Lester that night.
"I knew why Sharon was there. Richard and I were aware of the men in her life. I should have gone straight home, but I decided to go to Sharon's house. I wanted to make sure everything was okay. By this time, Richard was not answering his phone. I was concerned. When I reached the house, I caught sight of Richard carrying something heavy from his car to the house. I had no idea what it was, but it didn't look normal. Why was Richard at Sharon's house at that time of night? And where was Kyla or Paul, for that matter? When I saw Richard leave, I went inside. I headed straight for Kyla's bedroom. and what I saw made me sick to my stomach. I couldn't believe what Richard had done. Horrified, I raced out of the house, and that's when I ran into Pedro by the front door.
Calloway remembered how Kyla had spoken to Pedro that day. He must have tried to get in touch with her, and when she did not respond, he came to check up on her.
When I saw him, I knew how the situation looked, Senator Lester said. There was a dead body inside, and I was seen running out of the house. I then pulled out my gun, and I ordered Pedro to get in the trunk of my Lincoln.
Calloway stopped him. How did you manage to get Paul's gun? I know you had convinced him to purchase one. Senator Lester nodded.
I supported a bill to make it illegal to purchase military-grade weapons by civilians, but the outcry was more than I had expected. I was constantly getting death threats. I feared some gun-toting nutjob would show up at one of my rallies and do me harm. But I was in a difficult position. I couldn't go out and purchase a weapon, and I couldn't have armed bodyguards with me at all times. So I came up with the idea to get Paul to buy a firearm. I had him show me the gun, and when he did, I knew where he kept it. The next time I was at Charon's house, I stole it. I then paid someone to break into the box for me.
It seems like you pay your way out of any trouble, Calloway said. Then what did you do with Pedro? Senator Lester shook his head at what happened next.
I drove him to the back of the strip mall. I had campaigned there a few weeks earlier, so I knew the mall did not have adequate security. I shot Pedro in the trunk of the Lincoln, and then I dumped his body in the dumpster. I hoped no one had seen me, but I guess I was wrong.
You weren't. The call from Mike Rabonsky was only a ruse to get you here. No one caught you leaving the mall that night.
Now what happens?
Senator Lester asked. Now you go to jail for the murder of Pedro Catano. Senator Lester stood up and pulled out the Glock from his pocket. He aimed it at Calloway.
I don't think so. I doubt very much that you also recorded this conversation of ours.
I didn't have to, Calloway replied. There are two detectives sitting in a parked car outside the house. They know I am not carrying a weapon. This means you can't shoot me and argue self-defense. Plus, I bet that gun you are holding is registered to Paul, which means there's no way he could have shot Pedro, and there was definitely no way for you to pin my death on him when he is at his mother's house right now, surrounded by a press mob. Senator Lester contemplated Calloway's words. There is no way out, sir. Drop the weapon and give yourself up. A wan smile crossed Senator Lester's face.
There's always a way out, he said bitterly.
He aimed the gun squarely at Calloway's head. Calloway stood frozen. Senator Lester turned the gun around and placed it in his mouth. Before Calloway could stop him, he pulled the trigger. His skull exploded, and he dropped to the floor like a rag doll. Senator Baron Lester was dead before he hit the floor. Chapter 95. Calloway was in his office when there was a knock at the door. He got up to check and found Paul standing by the door with a smile on his face. Paul looked better than the last time he had seen him at his mother's house. The past week or so had taken a toll on him, but now a tremendous weight was off his shoulders, and his relief showed on his face. He no longer looked like a man who was contemplating suicide. All charges had been dropped against him. Dr. Richard Lester would go on trial for the murder of Kyla Gardner, and Senator Lester had already paid the ultimate price for Pedro Catano's murder.
"What are you doing here?" Calloway asked.
I thought I should come and thank you in person.
Calloway shrugged. You thanked me enough on the phone already.
I know, but it still wasn't enough, Paul said. Without your help, I would probably be in prison or dead.
Calloway did not know how to reply. Paul said, Detective Holt dropped by to see me this morning. Calloway was surprised. He did?
He apologized for the way he pursued me in Kyla's death.
And what was your reply?
I accepted it. I mean, it's not every day a lead investigator comes to your door to say he's sorry. If I were in your place, I would have squeezed every drop of the apology out of Holt. Paul was silent. He then lowered his head.
I never imagined my life would turn out this way.
I think it turned out for the better, Galloway said. Paul looked at him.
How?
Your wife, your brother-in-law, and your father-in-law are out of the picture. The Lester family tried to destroy you, but they ended up destroying themselves. You are free to do whatever you want with your life. If you choose, you can travel on that boat of yours now. Plus, with your wife dead, you're Kyla's next of kin, which means all the money she was going to inherit will come to you.
I would rather have my daughter than the money, Paul said. Even if she wasn't my blood, I still loved her.
You're a good man, Paul. I thought that the moment I met you. Paul pulled out an envelope and held it out for Galloway. What is this? Galloway asked.
Your fee for the job you did to prove my innocence.
I told you I was going to waive my fee.
I know, but I'm still paying it.
Galloway peeked inside the envelope. There was a stack of $100 bills. That's a lot of money, Paul.
It's the money I would have paid Roth for the trial anyway. I figured you should have it instead.
But
take it. I would have had to pay Roth 3 times what I'm giving you now. So it's a bargain, in my opinion.
In that case, I'll keep it, Galloway said. Paul held out his hand.
Thanks again for what you did for me. I will never forget it.
Galloway shook Paul's hand. You take care of yourself, Paul.
Chapter 96.
When Paul was gone, Galloway went inside and counted the money. It was indeed a lot. He suddenly began to feel lucky. Maybe he should go to the racetrack, the casino, or a bookies. He could double or triple his money. He got in his car and drove away. But instead of going to any of those places, he decided to go someplace far more important. You're back? Patty said, looking surprised. Is Nina home?
Yeah, why? Everything okay?
I got 3 tickets to the baseball game, and I was wondering if you and Nina would like to go with me.
You mean as a family?
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know if it's a good idea, Lee.
He held out an envelope for her.
What's this?
She said. It's for you and Nina. Her eyes went wide at the stack of bills.
That's a lot of money.
If I kept it, I'd end up burning it. I know you can do a lot of good with it.
Is this from the Paul Gardner case? She asked.
It is.
I read about it in the newspapers. I'm proud of you, Lee. Even Nina was excited to tell her friends about it.
Nina appeared from behind her mother.
Daddy, she said.
Hey, baby. Galloway hugged her. He did not want to let go of her, ever. He said, So, Mommy, what do you say?
Patty turned to Nina. Darling, do you think we should go to a baseball game with Daddy?
Nina jumped up in the air.
Yes, I want to go to a baseball game.
Patty smiled. Why don't you come in and sit down? It'll take us a couple of minutes to get ready.
Galloway smiled and went inside the house.
This has been The Dead Daughter, Lee Galloway, Book 1, written by Thomas Fincham, narrated by Adam Verner. Copyright 2017 by Thomas Fincham. Production copyright 2019 by Thomas Fincham.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.